Item four, presentation from Brown Armstrong on the audit of December 31, 2018 financial statements. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Andy Paulden. I'm a CPA and a partner with Brown Armstrong Accountancy Corporation on a beautiful hot Bakersfield. And it is my pleasure to be here today to present to you the results of our audit of your December 31, 2018 financial statements. I know electronically and otherwise you've received the deliverables that I'll be addressing today. Most importantly, our reports, but even more important, your comprehensive annual financial report, or CAFR, that is just a tremendous document, contains a tremendous amount of information, and your staff, as always, does a great job getting that information put together and distributed. I included kind of an outline or agenda in my materials that hopefully you have in front of you, and I was going to follow that today, but as always, please interrupt me, stop me, ask questions. I'm here to answer anything that I have the response to today or can get the answer to later on past this meeting. So I always like to just start and remind everybody what the purpose of an audit is, why you engage us as your independent auditors. So as you know, each year, your association prepares a comprehensive annual financial report that contains a number of sections, most importantly the financial section as it relates to our test work. And through that document, you are representing or asserting that all of the financial information contained therein is fairly presented in accordance with GAAP or generally accepted accounting principles. It's our responsibility as an independent organization to conduct an audit in accordance with our professional standards and render a written opinion as to whether or not your assertions and representations are in fact accurate. That opinion or report accompanies the financial statements and gives a reader or user of that financial information kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval, if you will, that someone outside your organization has looked at and takes responsibility for the fair presentation of those financial statements as well. I briefly described in the outline the audit process, and I'll go over that here briefly. First and foremost, we realize that you have deliverable deadlines statutorily, as well as plan sponsors relying on the information that you provide. So we work with your staff in concert in working backwards, if you will, from those deliverable dates to when we commence certain the overall engagement and certain components to make sure that we meet all of your obligations and expectations. The cornerstone of our audit is our understanding and evaluation of your internal controls. The internal controls are those checks and balances that your organization has put in place to ensure that your financial transactions are properly recorded and reported in the financial statements. We build upon our efforts in that arena from past experiences and past engagements, taking into consideration changes within your organization throughout the year. We obtain and update our understanding and evaluate those controls through inquiry and through observation and through testing certain key components of those controls so that we can make sure that we can place reliance on them in determining the extent of our substantive audit work that we perform in our audit engagement. Confirmations are a significant component of any audit, and particularly these types of audits, pension plan audits in particular. Anytime we can confirm and corroborate information that's been provided to us from within this organization, we consider that a higher level of audit evidence. So we confirm a tremendous amount of information. We can confirm with your custodian in regards to the certain components of the financial statements. We confirm with the managers, kind of comparing, if you will, what the managers are confirming, what the organization has represented to us, as well as what the custodian has in their books of records. Just as you rely on your actuary for a number of facets of the operation of this organization, we rely on them, as you do, for external financial reporting. And so we look to them to determine their capabilities, their qualifications, their standing, if you will, within the profession. We ensure that they are obtaining accurate information from this organization and the plan sponsors through this organization, that they are implementing and relying on the assumptions that you as a board have approved. And that's an extremely important component of not only the funding valuations, but more importantly now with all that's gone on in GASB 67 and 68 and 74 and 75, there's a tremendous amount of effort in the external financial reporting that relies on the accuracy of their work. We also confirm with legal counsel, make sure we have knowledge of all commitments and contingencies that may or may not require disclosure or recording in the plan's financial statements. We confirm with your plan sponsors, regarding certain information, predominantly contributions into the plan. And then we reach out and touch your active and retired participants, again, to ensure that we've got accurate information maintained by this organization that's also going into the actuarial studies, and that plan participants are contributing pursuant to plan provisions, as well as being compensated, or retirees and beneficiaries are being paid pursuant to plan provisions as well. So that's a significant amount of our effort. We come in and perform interim testing, what we refer to as interim testing. That's where we're waiting for the books and records to be closed. We're doing our audit planning, evaluating internal controls, taking into consideration changes within the organization, just prepping for the audit process, if you will. Once the books are closed, we're provided draft financial statements. We then conduct what we call our final field work, and that's where we substantiate all of the amounts and disclosures in the financial statements. That culmination of that process, albeit brief in this setting, it's a tremendous amount of effort, but that brings us to where we are today, and that's presentation of our reports or our deliverables to you. The next area I want to talk about is kind of the significant audit areas that we focus on in the conduct of our engagement. Auditors are required to take a risk-based approach. When an auditor talks about risk, they're trying to identify within a particular organization where there is potential for material misstatement in your financial statements, either based on just the inherent type of transactions that occur within a particular financial transaction class, controls that are in place or lack thereof, any number of things that just cause us to pause and say, is there a higher risk that there's misstatement in this type of a transaction class within the financial statements? And materiality comes into play in that regards also, because that is certainly a concept that's inherent in the auditing profession. So the main areas that we focus on are obviously your investments. Unique in the standpoint that they are marked to market for defined benefit plans. You also have strata, if you will, in terms of risk within your investment portfolio, from, you know, highly liquid down to less liquid real estate and alternative investment type investments. So we have that strata as well. Obviously, the related earnings are typically the single loss addition to plan net assets. Again, marking to market, these are the hard dollar earnings, the realized earnings, if you will, as well as market fluctuations. I talked about the importance of participant data and the actuarial and the interface with actuarial information. I can't stress that enough. Our firm has always been a proponent of really auditing very deep the participant data and the actuarial studies that go along with that. That was sometimes questioned, if you will, by some of our peers and some of our clients. But when 67, 68 came out, it reaffirmed the importance of that participant data and the fact that we have to dive into not only what's maintained here, but the accuracy of that information is maintained by the plan sponsors. So extremely important component of the audit process for these types of plans. Employee and employer contributions are also a significant addition to the plan. We want to make sure that they're calculated in accordance with plan provisions, that they're being deposited by the plan sponsors on a timely basis and in accurate amounts. And then finally, the reason you exist, if you will, and that's to pay retirees and their beneficiaries, so the benefit payments, and again, we want to make sure that those are in accordance with plan provisions, being paid to valid participants, and in accurate amounts. And then finally, I just wanted to touch upon GASB 7475. That's the new standard for other post-employment benefits. That was a significant amount of effort between our firm and your very capable staff in hashing that out, making sure that we got that presented accurately in the financial statements. It's a new standard that's been around for a while, followed kind of the pension standard, 67, 68. So I just wanted you to be aware of that was a key component of the audit process this year as it relates to OPEB for your employees. So moving on to our deliverables, first and foremost, I'm pleased to report that we have issued an unmodified or a clean opinion whereby we do opine that your financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with GAAP. That is the highest opinion that an independent audit firm can issue, and you're to be congratulated on that. And that's included on page 20 of this document, and I believe there was a standalone copy of that report as well. So congratulations, as always, for receiving that clean opinion. And that's a testament to this board and ultimately your staff and their preparation of external financial reporting. We have a standalone report, if you will, that's included, and I believe it was handed out today, and I know it was in the electronic board materials. We call that the report to the Board of Retirement and/or the Audit Committee. These are standalone deliverables, if you will, that don't necessarily accompany the financial statements, but nonetheless, they're required to be issued pursuant to our professional standards. First and foremost is the Statement on Auditing Standards 114 report. That's on begins on page one of that standalone document. We never lose sight of the fact that we are hired by this board. We work to this board, and we report to this board. Obviously, you discharge the day-to-day performance of the audit process to your very capable staff, and we work with them hand-in-hand and in that process. Nonetheless, you are the fiduciaries that we report to. We're obligated to report back to you whether or not there are any issues that arose during the conduct of the audit, whether there were disagreements on an opinion or disagreements of opinion in regards to an auditing or an accounting issue. Were there any adjustments that were made? Was there any consultation with other auditors that we needed to be made aware of in order to make sure that they had all the pertinent facts? And anything else as fiduciaries that you need to be apprised of in regards to the conduct of the audit. As you can see from that report, there were no such items. As always, it was a very smooth process, and no such items arose during the conduct of the audit. I talked about at the outset that we have professional standards that we have to adhere to in the conduct of our audit. We not only have the AICPA standards, but anytime we conduct a governmental type audit, we have to follow what are oftentimes referred to as yellow book standards or governmental auditing standards. They go above and beyond our traditional AICPA standards in this arena. They look to and require that we have a good set of quality controls within our firms, that we're allocating appropriate personnel with appropriate training, expertise, that they are overseen by an appropriate team from the managing partner on down to our supervisors and seniors, all the way down to the staff level. It requires us to have a certain amount of training, continuing professional education in this arena. So again, a lot on our qualifications, but also requires us to look into your organization kind of above and beyond the traditional AICPA standards and identify whether or not there are any weaknesses in your internal controls or any instances of noncompliance with applicable laws and regulations, both of which could or may or did have a material impact on your financial statements. And so that is included in that document as well. I'm pleased to report that there were no weaknesses in your internal controls, nor were there any instances of noncompliance with applicable laws and regulations. So again, you're to be congratulated on that. The final document is what we refer to as our agreed upon conditions report. And as I always like to do, I'd like to put that a little bit in context and then talk about the contents thereof. Within our profession, if we identify weaknesses in internal controls, there's a hierarchy. There's material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, and agreed upon conditions. The first two are so egregious or impacted or could potentially impact your financial reporting process that it could have impacted our independent auditor's report or had other ramifications as a result of the audit process. I'm pleased to report that there were no such items issued or identified in the current year. So that leaves us down to kind of the lower level. Agreed upon conditions are just that. These are things that, based on our observations, our experiences with other peers within the arena, the 37 Act arena, just things that we feel that you could shore up a little bit, maybe make you a little more efficient and strengthen controls. But again, no impact on our independent auditor's report, kind of a lower level process. But nonetheless, in developing these, we identify the issue. We fully vet it as an audit team. We then make sure we have our facts in order. We then discuss it with appropriate members of your organization. Again, representing or presenting our facts, the reasons why we're bringing it to their attention. We usually have consensus and move that forward to a formal finding within this agreed upon conditions report. We identify that finding. We make a recommendation for improved staff to jump on, if you will, and provide a management response and say, we agree, and here's what we're doing to implement change on a move forward basis. These don't always get corrected within a 1 year period. Sometimes there's crossover, but you can see we're going in the right direction. We had three current year findings, all of which were fully discussed with your very capable staff, and we have no doubt that appropriate action has been or will be undertaken. Last year, we had seven of those items, the majority of which were cleared, a couple carry forward just because of a timing perspective, if you will, but we're going in the right direction. And if you remember when I was here last year, a lot of those findings dealt with the IT area or information technology area, and that was something that we really focused on in the prior year. So that was the reason why we had a significant number, but again, we're seeing things go in the right direction, and we never take these as a gotcha or an adversarial type of a presentation. This is helping you, your organization, and your staff in turn takes it that way, and it's a very good working relationship in regards to those findings. So those are kind of the highlights I wanted to address on my presentation today. Most importantly, clean opinion, congratulations. A few things that you can work on and we'll continue to work on with you. But all in all, a very good process and a very good outcome, in my opinion. So I'd be happy to answer any questions or take any comments that you may have.
John?
Yeah, Andy, this is a 30,000-foot question. What do I have in mind? Let me start with best practice. No, let me start with valuations. Madoff being a bad example, but somehow investors sent Madoff money. They got back statements. The statements, of course, had nothing to do with, as it turned out, the assets that actually presumably underlay what was shown on the statements. Would you talk about how you got comfortable with the various funds that we have money in that are private equity and alternative investments and the kinds of things that don't lend themselves fairly easily to valuation?
You bet. That's a good question. And Madoff was first and foremost a criminal, no question about that. And number two, one of the things that sophisticated investors, and there were many that invested with him, were looking to were audited financial statements that were provided for the underlying documents. And he was using bogus audit firms to accomplish that. That was one of the facets of the scheme. So,
Ernie.
So first let me just say, you know, I mentioned earlier that we've got a strata of risk within your investment portfolio. And, you know, it's very easy for things that are traded on national exchanges to get comfortable with the valuation. When we don't have that comfort level, when it's real estate and alternative investment type of situations, the first thing that we look at are your internal controls. And you've got a lot of people looking over your investment portfolio. You've got not only this board, you've got your investment people on staff here. You've got your investment consultants, you've got the custodian, you've got the money manager. So you've got a lot of people looking at these things. So that's a good segregation. So again, that kind of gives us a little bit better understanding or not complacency, but comfort, if you will, that at least we've got a lot of people looking at these kind of things. But nonetheless, we can't take that at just face value. So your focus was predominantly on the alternative type investments, things that are not necessarily traded on or are not traded on exchanges. And again, we look at the controls in place here in that arena. We look at our experiences in auditing other entities that use these same managers, because there is a lot of crossover. So again, comfort. We're comparing and contrasting returns, if you will, to give us, again, 30,000 foot comfort level that the valuations we're looking at are in the ballpark. Then we look at your due diligence, not only and that includes your investment consultant, not only in your initial hiring of those managers and investing those portfolios, but how often are you getting information from them and from whom and who's reviewing that information and how often are they on your watch list? How often are you going out and doing site visits with them? So again, kind of internal control related aspects. And that's part of that understanding and evaluation of the internal controls that I talked about. And then finally, on a sample basis, we began paring our sample sizes down because of our understanding of the process, the internal controls, but we looked to the audited financial statements of those particular investments. Are they, you know, most if not all are all big four firms? That's kind of the understanding, if you will, that those people that are managing those investments realize they want that assurance that there's, and could be appearance. We all use the same standards in the auditing profession, but they're, you know, that's, they all have a great reputation by and large. And so that's a key component. Are they an actual firm that we have experience and knowledge of, and not something that's, you know, XYZ audit company or audits RS type thing? And then looking at those audited financial statements to identify whether or not there's clean opinions, any issues that, you know, it's oftentimes we don't get access to this, but we ask for it nonetheless. Can we get internal control reports that have been issued by the auditors of that investment? They don't necessarily have to give us those, but they do have to give us SOX 1 and SOX 2 reports. And again, that's a key component of us being able to look beyond the financial statements and just evaluate, because that helps us with the valuation. But we want to make sure that there's no findings as it relates to the internal controls within those organizations. So it's a very lengthy process in going through the audit of alternative investments. You know, they've been around for a long time. The profession was 2 or 3 years behind when these first became in vogue. We've come a long way, not only the profession as a whole, but our firm and the brainstorming that we do, since we do so many of these types of plans, and what we can do better, and how do we do a deep dive. So I know that's a long answer, but it's an important component of the audit process.
Good answer. One other quick question. We'll sort of have the floor for a moment. This is also 30,000 feet. One of the great benefits I think we get from using a firm like yours is that you see how other plans operate. You master the knowledge you need to come up with opinions. Are there best practices out there that you think would be helpful to us to know about that we're not now following?
Before I answer it, let me first say I've been in this arena for a long, long time. And one of the things that I've truly enjoyed about working in the 37 Act arena and defined benefits, but particularly the 37 Act, is you guys share information. There's really no closed door policies, and that's tremendous. You know, Henry can pick up the phone, Gail can pick up the phone, talk to her peers and get feedback. Your investment people can do the same. So I really appreciate that aspect. In answer to your question, that's one of the things that we look at, particularly when we're coming up with these agreed upon conditions. And trust me, we look hard. Again, it's not, we want to have a gotcha moment, but we don't want to miss anything. If there's something that somebody else is doing that can be brought to your attention and you can implement it, we will certainly bring that to your attention. Other than the items that we've addressed here, I don't recall anything specifically that we addressed during the audit engagement. I can't think of anything post engagement, if you will, that's coming down the pipe that you need to be aware of. But that's something that, you know, we're always in tune with, because that's value added to our clients. And so the answer is I can't think of anything right now, but we're always on the hunt for things that can help our clients.
Jerry?
I'll leave John at 30,000 feet and come down to treetop level here if I could. One of the agreed upon conditions indicates in a sampling of balances, contribution balances, that like 13% of the lump sum balances and 35% of the decedent balances, or indicated there were balances that shouldn't have been there. A couple of questions to maybe better point it to staff. The materiality of those, were they, you know, nickels and dimes, 20 bucks, 30 bucks, or were they substantial? And was this indication enough for the internal group to go back and look at all the balances that were out there, as opposed to just a sample, to determine if there's any others that should be zeroed out? Because the percentage of the sample seems pretty high.
The percentage of the sample is high, and remember, we're sampling for those that have been dispersed, so that's a relatively small sample relative to the entire population. The dollar amounts were certainly immaterial. I can't say whether they are $20 or $200. I don't recall right off the top of my head, but I know that our conclusion was that there is no way that this could be a material impact on the financial statements. Had that been the result, we certainly would have had to expand our procedures. You know, one of the things that you have, and I'll certainly defer to Henry and or Gail or other staff members, one of the things we always look at is, you know, if you set up controls on a rotating basis to look at these things, which we've certainly brought it to your attention, I think that's typically adequate. You don't necessarily have to go through each and every one of them, but that may be the conclusion if the sample or the population is not significant. So yes, the sheer numbers look unique or could be alarming, but the dollar amounts in question are not. Gail and Henry, I don't know if you guys wanted to add anything on to that.
I could hold their response for just a second, not to put you on the spot then. If it was immaterial, and that's what I suspected when I read it, how can that be expected to cause actuarial reports and assumptions to be incorrect? It's going to have a pretty small impact, correct?
It is. And what we're looking at here is if we don't stop the leak, does it continue to grow?
Yeah.
And you know, actuarial studies are their best guesses, if you will, their estimations. And so could what was presented here or identified have a material impact? No. But, you know, sometimes people don't understand materiality. And that's what we're just trying to put you on notice that we should not have these type of situations.
Yeah, I think my goal would be, if I were in that spot, to have the same test done next year, the sample would come up with zeros.
And that's our expectation and hope as well.
Okay. Thanks.
And we would hope that, you know, if your staff has the time, I know you got a lot going on, you know, before we even come and test it, that should be, you know, they should, in my opinion, if it's their conclusion, you know, conduct a standalone type of a, for lack of a better term, internal audit function.
Special project.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. In fairness, Gail and Henry, if you had a comment on that.
Sure. I appreciate what Andy was saying, but this is connected with the cleanup that we're doing, the conversion from subledger to CFAS.
Okay.
So the items, as of the date they were cut, they had a balance, but there's a timing effect part of the cleanup that gets to it. Certainly the folks at Siegel also review the data and they come back to us and say, hey, I thought this person was off the books, and we do a cleanup then. But as of 1231, which is the snapshot of the audit report, there was a balance there. So these are recommendations that we know about, but it's a part of that whole subledger decommissioning cleanup that we're doing. So we're focused on this, we're bearing down on this. Next year, we're going to see some improvement.
Yeah, great. I guess my goal was to establish that it probably was immaterial. We're talking about very small balances, but that the goal would be to try and reduce the numbers that fall into that category.
That's right.
Yeah.
And as Andy pointed out, it's a leak. You clean it now because it might appear, and this is a sample.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we focus on this before it's a big problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
And the focus is on Cicera staff identifying these issues before it's brought to us from an outside vendor like Brown Armstrong or like Siegel. Excuse me. And, I think part of the data cleanup project, I think, can encompass taking a look at this so that next year we come back and, you know, we're seeing zero on this line.
Right. That's a goal.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments from trustees? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much for the report.
Great. And the thorough review.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck with the move. I know that's always a difficult process.
Did they give you an address to go next time?
Yes, I've already got it.
Oh, good. You could find a 7-Eleven here when you come in.
Okay, so we'll move on.